Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Aaron Rodgers might not have Davante Adams tomorrow for Thursday Night Football, but could Rodgers actually be better without his top target? We'll tell you why we're asking. Mike Tomlin shot down the college coaching rumors yesterday, so how should Steeler fans feel about his press conference? And where will Patrick Mahomes and the 3-4 Chiefs land on Nick's new NFL tiers? Also, Nick has new NFL tiers. Good spooky Wednesday morning. We're getting into it here. Days away from Halloween. First things first, Jenna Wolf, Nick Wright, Chris Broussard. Spooky music, too. We're getting all in on the theme. Kevin Wilds. Tier integrity. Two words, Nick. Tier integrity. After what we saw last week, I can only imagine and assume you'll be fair with tiers today.
Well, listen, believe it or not, the committee is still meeting. They have quorum without me. Tier's going to be a little later today, 8:15, because we need a little more time. We need a little more time. A lot of controversy at the top, the middle, and the bottom. But we'll get them in. 8:15, America, the tiers will be revealed.
What's up, Wilds?
Can't wait.
Thought Wilds had something for us. All right, we'll get to that in a second. We got to start, though, some Lakers and Spurs last night. First road game of the season for L.A. No LeBron in this one. Out with right ankle soreness. So the workload went to Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook. And the two balled. Wasn't easy. Lakers found themselves down 12 to start the fourth quarter. But they caught up. They sent this one to overtime. And how about Russ? 15 of his 33 came in the fourth and overtime. Davis finished with 35 points and 17 boards. Lakers picking up the much-needed win. Although, scary moment late in the fourth quarter. Anthony Davis going down, holding his knee. He was able to return. Talked about it at the podium after the injury. Take a listen.
We want to box out. And then, he was doing the job flying in. But I was still kind of planted on the ground and, he ran into my knee. Like a little stinger, And then started moving. Just kind of went away as I kept playing. Still felt it a little bit, but tried to finish the game. And we'll see how it is when I wake up tomorrow. But I told Russ, I said whether I'll play, Bron play, we don't play, it doesn't matter. You still got to be yourself. And he did that tonight. The way he played tonight was incredible. And we need that from him every night, no matter if Bron is playing or not, or if I'm playing or not, be yourself and we'll find ways to kind of adjust around him.
So, Chris Broussard, what'd you learn about the Lakers and their overtime win without LeBron last night?
I do have a lot to say about this, Jenna. Number one, this is not why you brought in Russell Westbrook. You brought him in to win a championship. But one of the fringe benefits is that without LeBron James, whether that is for an entire game or week or stretch or whatever it may be, or whether it's just for some time during the game when LeBron's resting on the bench while he's playing in a game, you will be better without LeBron. And that's a huge benefit. The Lakers have been 23-35 in the previous three seasons without LeBron when he's injured. Now they can still be a good team without LeBron, and you saw that last night. That's a huge benefit. They wouldn't have been the seventh seed in the play-in tournament last year had they had a guy like Westbrook to carry them while LeBron was out. So that can get LeBron more rest if he'll take it. Like tonight, he's questionable. Maybe if they don't have a Russ and they need a win, LeBron plays. So that's a benefit. You also learned, and this might sound funny, but you also learned that Russell Westbrook is still terrific. Like, you're going to see, as he's playing with LeBron, his numbers aren't going to be what we're used to. He's going to still be adjusting and looking bad at times. We have to remember this dude is still a terrific player. Obviously, Anthony Davis showed us that he's back. All right, he's not the AD of last year. He's the AD of 2 years ago. He was phenomenal last night. So all of that's well and good. But ultimately, Nick, when it comes down to the main thing, which is title or bust for the Lakers, I don't think we learned a thing. You know, because the fact of the matter is that Russ is not going to be playing without LeBron. And Anthony Davis said, we need Russ to be Russ and do this when LeBron's out there. Well, he can't do that when LeBron's out there. That's not best for the Lakers. And LeBron or AD is going to not be able to shine if Russ is doing all of that. And so to win the championship, those three, just like we've said at the beginning of the year, still have to figure out how they can all excel together. So this was nice, but ultimately we didn't really learn anything about how they're going to play better together.
We didn't learn how they're going to play better together, but I would argue, and stay with me here, Broussard, for a moment, it was still important, and here's why. I'm one of the last people remaining that thinks regular season basketball has some real import on who wins the championship, if for no other reason than seeding and home court advantage can matter. I think you saw it last year with the Lakers. If they're not the seventh seed and drawing a Suns team early, and LeBron in the first round doesn't have to be fully healthy because they have an easier first round opponent, then maybe the entire season goes differently. And your point about the Lakers were terrible the last 3 years without LeBron, the Cavs were 4-23 in LeBron's second stint in Cleveland without him. By the way, he played all 82 the year they traded Kyrie. So that means the Cavs, it was the 3 years with Kyrie and Kevin Love when LeBron sat 4-23. So being able to win games that LeBron sits, I would sit him tonight. You're playing Oklahoma City, give him the night off, and see if these guys can run it back again. So I do think that was important. I also think that Vogel is learning what this team needs on the fly. And sometimes a box score jumps out at you. Broussard, Malik Monk was plus 31 in 39 minutes, which means the Lakers were minus 27 in the 14 minutes he didn't play. I think the numbers are going to be start jumping off the page that you must have a shooter on the court, not only for the shooting he adds, and I want your reaction to these two pictures we're going to show, but what it allows for the other guys. Show Anthony Davis's shot chart, then show Russell Westbrook's shot chart. What AD did some mid-range stuff, but he lived at the rim, where that's where he did his damage. And then show Russ. It was all at the rim. All of it. I mean, he had the 1-3 that we showed in the highlight. Everything else is at the rim. So, Broussard, I do think you're right that they need to play together a lot to figure out what works for the postseason. But to be in the best position in the postseason, Broussard, they got to win games like this one, and in years past, they wouldn't have.
Well, and I think, Nick, you and I, before the season, we're saying you got to open up the floor, and that's why you need AD at the five, right? What you saw, AD at the rim, Russ at the rim, that's because they did have the shooting out there with Monk. And we're baffled that they kind of have gone the opposite way with trying to play big with DeAndre Jordan in there so much, or Dwight Howard. So that shouldn't have had to be learned, but maybe they did learn that last night. And I think, Nick, LeBron shooting so well at the start from three-point line land has kind of kept Vogel from seeing that because, oh, we got LeBron out there hitting three. So he's our shooter. But you're right, Malik Monk, I mean, if he can continue, and he shot it well last year, he hadn't been a great three-point shooter early in his career, but last year he was very good. If he can continue that, that could be huge wilds for these Lakers.
Yeah, he hit the big three. That really felt like the dagger to the Spurs when they thought they were pulling away and Malik Monk hit that three. Nick, I want to talk about the intensity of the game. We saw my man Jakob have some big dunks and sort of San Antonio's like, oh, we're going to win this game. Then you saw Russ's dunk on the other end in overtime. To me, that took the air out of the building. Once Russ dunked, that was the moment that I said, oh, the Spurs kind of knew. They hung their heads, and they knew they weren't coming back. What do you think about the intensity of Russ and how that affects the Lakers? Because as much as I like AD, and you know, we always talk about him kind of being on the fringe MVP candidate, when he's laying in the ground, writhing in pain, and then pops back up, I don't know if the Lakers look around and be like, ah, all right, let's keep feeding AD. AD's our guy. Feels like Russ takes that mantle emotionally, too, when LeBron's not in the game.
Well, listen, I think that is one of the reasons Russ doesn't get enough credit, is he is a guy who you cannot, for good or for bad, if you just watch him, you don't know, is this a game six of a conference semifinals? Or is this the sixth game in 13 nights in February? You don't, and teams that are championship or bust need that, because it's easy to lose a sleepy Monday night game or Tuesday night game to the Spurs. Like, that can happen. And the Spurs, to their credit, they only have the one win, but they've actually played well this year considering the fact they don't have any star players. So I do think Russ is good in that regard. I also think the Lakers, you know, it's interesting. They wouldn't tell you this, but AD goes down writhing in pain. They have to play 5-on-4 on a critical possession. And the very next play down the court, they throw an alley-oop to him like that he doesn't get to. I don't think they were that worried that Anthony Davis was deeply injured.
Who'd he learn that from, Nick?
This is AD.
Who's he learning that from?
Hold on.
Every time you go down, it looks like a career-ending injury.
I feel like Anthony Davis is in his own category in that one. But one other very quick note, Frank Vogel, you're an NBA champion. You did a great job with the Pacers. I understand you know more about basketball than I do. I get it. But you can never play Russ and Rondo at the same time. You wouldn't play DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard at the same time, and yet, for some reason, they think Russ and Rondo have shared the court this season for 20 minutes. The Lakers have been outscored by 23 points in those 20 minutes. If you extrapolate it to a full game, they would lose that game 149-94. He did it in the first quarter and the third quarter. It can simply never happen. These are simple things that should never happen again. That's a minor point. But it can't happen. It just can't happen, Jenna. Russ and Rondo cannot share the court for one more minute the rest of the season. There's no reason for it.
Duly noted, Frank Vogel, take notes.
I know it will. But
Lakers with a nice overtime win over the Spurs. Yeah, we'll see how AD's doing. And LeBron. Back talking to Mike Tomlin, though. He shot down some college coaching rumors in an epic, absolutely epic rant yesterday. We'll share his fiery comments with you next. And coming up at 8:15, Nick unveils his NFL tiers entering week 8. Ooh. A new team at the top, perhaps, after the Ravens lost to Cincy. Gotta love movement. It's ahead. First things first.
With Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals, you will be eating stress-free this spring. Each meal is chef-crafted, fresh, and dietitian-approved. More importantly, they are never frozen and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled up all day long. Try meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, truffle butter, and shrimp. Restaurant-quality food that you do not have to prep, cook, or clean up, delivered right to your doorstep. And if you need to change your deliveries, you can pause or reschedule whenever you like. Factor is your solution for fast and premium meals. Also, for the month of April, Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. So what are you waiting for? Head to factormeals.com/firstthingsfirst50 and use code FIRSTTHINGSFIRST50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code FIRSTTHINGSFIRST50 at factormeals.com/firstthingsfirst50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next. Fuel up fast, eat better, and get back to what you love doing this spring with Factor.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Talking Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin. His name popped up with regards to the job opening at USC this week after Carson Palmer mentioned him to Dan Patrick. But would Tomlin entertain that? Would he consider leaving the NFL, the Steelers? In a word, no. But listen to more words that mean no from Mike Tomlin.
Hey guys, I don't have time for that speculation. I mean, that's a joke to me. I got one of the best jobs in all of professional sport. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? That'll be the last time that I address it. And not only today, but moving forward. Never say never, but never. Okay? Anybody else got any questions about any college jobs? There's not a booster with a big enough blank check.
Anyone else? All right.
Thank you. Anybody asking Sean Payton about that? You know, anybody asking Andy Reid about stuff like that?
Is it just me? I feel like there's some wiggle room there. No wiggle room. Round of applause for Coach Mike Tomlin. His defiance.
Wow.
Broussard, Tomlin's comments yesterday were blank.
They were a door slam. Now, for all coaches out there, this is how you put a rumor to bed. All right? We've seen plenty of coaches waffle when asked about other jobs. We've seen them even say the right thing, but with no conviction. All right? That left you wondering, is he really interested in that job? This is how you slam the door. Nick, you and I talked about this yesterday. If you've got a job in the NFL with security, and there's no more security than in Pittsburgh, where they've had three coaches, including Tomlin, in the last 52 years. All right, that's job security, especially when you're doing well as a coach. And so why in the world would you even be thinking about going to college where you got to recruit, you've got to babysit your players, make sure they're going to class, you got to deal with boosters, all the mess that goes on outside of football that comes with a college job. So, Tomlin, I totally believe he has no interest whatsoever in leaving Pittsburgh, especially for college. The only thing I took issue with what he said was when he brought up Sean Payton and Andy Reid. Now, I don't know if he meant it racially because he's African-American and they're not, or did he mean it because they're on a similar caliber as he is as far as coaches.
Yes.
Really top-tier coaches. Why are they asked about it? But either way, Tomlin didn't need to bring them up because the reason he was asked about it and they weren't is because somebody threw your name out there. In fact, three people threw your name out there. Ryan Clark, Doug Whaley, and Carson Palmer. So that's why he was asked. If somebody had thrown out Sean Payton's name, he would have been asked about it too by the media. So I didn't think that was necessary, but otherwise, an A for Tomlin on this press conference.
So that's the part that to me was the most interesting. Before I get to that quickly, one of the reasons that other coaches don't issue these strong of a denials is because they want the rumors out there. Sometimes they are the source of the rumors. As I said, sometimes coaches use this as a negotiating point or a leverage point to get a contract extension, to get a raise. There's always interest out there for me. And so there, not everyone has the command of a press conference the way Tomlin does. But even if they did, they wouldn't issue these types of denials because they like their name being in the rumor mill. But to me, his comments were revealing because of the very end of it. Because I do think Tomlin, whether it's this story, and Broussard, you make a good point about why this story is specific to him, or just other, when we're talking about great coaches, Tomlin very often gets left out when Sean Payton does not, when Andy Reid does not. And I think Mike Tomlin's like, either of those guys won more Super Bowls than me? Either of those guys been to more Super Bowls than me? People are like, oh, you had Big Ben. Well, Sean Payton had Drew Brees. He also had 3 straight 7-9 years with Drew Brees. Have I ever had a losing record? And so I think that very end, and Wilds, the fact that he picked, so it's revealing to me is my answer. The fact that he picked those two names specifically, I think shows you that he does feel like he doesn't necessarily always get the credit he deserves. And he's not a big credit guy publicly, but this was an opportunity, a little window into the fact that I think he feels a little disrespected in how his, because when we talk about the best coaches, it's like, hey, Sean McVay just leapfrogs him like he's above him. Cliff Kingsbury and his 44 career winning percentage. No. He's above him. Much less Sean Payton. I'm just telling you, when it's discussed, we talked about geniuses, okay, young offensive minds, yep, guys like Kyle that. Shanahan. Tomlin sometimes gets lost in the show. That's the name I thought I mentioned. I meant to say Kyle Shanahan. If I didn't, my apologies. But I think it was a 44 career winning percentage. I don't, maybe I said the wrong name. People talk about him, and so I think it was revealing there, Wilds.
Oh, I think it's revealing too. He didn't mention old Bill Belichick. Maybe he's got his eyes on coming to Foxborough if Bill Belichick ever decides to hang it up. If I was a reporter, I would go in and be like, hey, what about the Patriots? What do you think of that? And if he didn't issue that strong of a denial, also would have been funny if he said, what about Pete Carroll? You guys asked Pete Carroll, and the reporter's like, well, Pete, he was actually at USC, so we don't know. Anyway, there's like restriction. All right, my answer, however, is another loss for USC. They took two L's this week. They got blown out by Notre Dame, and now they took this L from Tomlin. Because I think Carson Palmer was out there saying, hey, you know, it's a great job, Southern California, what a legacy. And Tomlin was like, not even close. So I actually think this poisoned the well a little bit, Jenna, for the next person who wants to get this job. It's no longer this awesome job. It's the job that Mike Tomlin just tore to shreds in a press conference.
But again, Nick, you're right. And Broussard, you're right. How refreshing to hear a head coach actually just, boom, shut it down. I'm done. We won't be talking about this again. All right, we are moving on. We got Saints All-Pro linebacker DeMario Davis joining us next. We got so much to talk to him, ahead of an NFC showdown with Tom Brady and the Bucs on Sunday. He'll join us next, first things first. Last night, the Braves offense fueled them to a 1-0 series lead. Now the Astros will try to even the score before the scene shifts to Atlanta. Game 2 of the World Series tonight, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific on Fox and the Fox Sports app. And David Ortiz, Big Papi, giving away $25,000 for Game 2 of the World Series tonight on the Fox Bet Super 6 app. Super 6 players have won over $5 million. You could be next to win some of Big Papi's money. Scan the QR code, download the app, answer 6 questions about the game before the first pitch tonight on Fox. Do not miss out. As always, it is free to play. All right, here we go, guys. Time for Nick to unveil the NFL tiers entering Week 8. Lot went on in Week 7. Chiefs are back under 500. Lamar lost to the Bengals. Whole bunch of blowouts. So, Nick, take us through your NFL tiers entering Week 8.
Very controversial week of the tiers. There was a mini mutiny in the room. Folks said that I was embarrassing the committee by not properly ranking the Chiefs, by not giving the Cardinals their respect. It was a tough meeting that went late into the night, but we got through it. Let's unveil the bottom 4 rows. Some intrigue near the bottom. Don't worry about those bottom 2 rows entirely. Those teams are awful. Seattle Look at where the Seahawks are. The question remaining,
brutal.
Will Russell Wilson pantomime a draft room by himself? Wait, they don't even have their first round pick. How's he going to do that? And then the row right above. All those teams have three wins, all still alive, but all got to start stacking wins. Is that the Falcons on there? It is. Okay. Now reveal the next one. The committee was right. I have to treat the Chiefs like they're one of 32. The committee has 32 children. We love them all the same. And the Chiefs are a game from relegation. What does relegation on the tiers mean? It means you get lumped in with that first group. If the Chiefs lose to the Giants, they're just one of the bad teams. However, if they beat the Giants, and then they have the Packers, and then all of a sudden, turn the season around. But right now, it's a swing game. Monday Night Football against the Giants. All right, show me the next group of teams. Because now we're getting to the good teams. Nate, we don't believe you. Raiders, you have 5 wins. Guess what? The committee doesn't believe you. You have 1 good win on the season. That was in week 1 in overtime against Baltimore. We also wonder if some of the, you know, buzz from Gruden being out and the new coach coming in is going to wear off. You played some bad teams. And the Saints, has there been a less impressive or inspiring win in the NFL all year than the one the Saints just had over the Seahawks? I'm not sure, but those two teams are combined 9-4, so you've got to give them their respect. But the committee does not believe you. All right, next group of teams, please. AFC logjam. Guys, this is tough to figure here. The Ravens plummeted after getting beat down by the Bengals. But the Ravens and Bengals have the same record. Does anyone truly believe the Bengals are a better team? I don't know, but they did just go to Baltimore and crush them. The Chargers, coming off a bad loss, had a bye week, so they couldn't move up or down. That's how we see the AFC logjam. A big fall from grace for Baltimore. Next group, A+A game. All 4 of these teams look awesome with regularity. Now, they're not quite as good as the 3 teams above them, but the Packers keep taking care of business. The Rams, the Lions did everything except for, you know what I mean, have Dan Campbell run on the field for a play. That wasn't enough. The Titans just annihilated the Chiefs. And the Bills, we've seen them at their best. We've also seen them at their worst, where their quarterback literally trips himself, falls on his face, and loses because of it. But we got to give them credit for how good they've been when they've been good. All right, number 1 contenders, please. Oh, look at the Tampa Bay Bucks. Highest they've been all year on the tiers. Guys, folks, by folks, I really mean Broussard, accuses the committee of having biases and agendas as opposed to being sober analysts of what we've seen this season. Even though Tampa's schedule has been light, the way they dominated the Bears, it's 35 points in the first half, just ended that game immediately. We've got to give them their respect. And the Cowboys were the number 1 contenders last week, and they were on a bye, so they stay there. They don't move up or down. And then, not called the favorites, undefeated, not undisputed, the Arizona Cardinals up top. So here's the thing. There is a lot of controversy around the Cardinals within the committee. Some guys say their quarterback might be the MVP. Their defense has allowed more than 20 points only once all year. What more do you want to see? Other members of the committee say, yeah, but do you really in your bones, in your marrow, believe in them? And the answer to that for many of us is no. However, we are almost halfway through the season. They are still undefeated, and they have an opportunity on Thursday night to beat the Packers and to be a unanimous number 1. And if they lose to the Packers, the committee felt it would have been kind of unfair that all year long they never get the reward of being at the top of the tiers. So win or lose, it's going to make sense. If they lose, at least they had their moment in the sun. If they win, they're going to be everyone's number 1. So there it is. The committee's tiers entering week 8. Broussard, you have accused the committee of bias. You have accused the committee of corruption. Hopefully, that all is put to rest after this week. But the Chiefs don't even make it on the screen here. Hopefully, it's all put to bed.
All right, Nick, despite this smile on my face, I'm in pain. Because I think you know, and I think everybody on the panel knows, that there is nothing I hate more than having to say, I told you so. But, Nick, I told you so. Last week, who was I saying should be number 1 on the tiers? The Arizona Cardinals. And you and the committee fought me on it, And it was like they clearly should be number one. Now, I said Monday that Tampa Bay, I think, is the best team in the NFL. But I'm fine with the Cardinals being number one, especially with that title. Great title. Undefeated, but not undisputed. That works. All right, so that's number one. Secondly, the Buccaneers. Finally, every single week you have underrated the Buccaneers, and now you're finally seeing the light, and you've got them where they should be. So I'm proud of you and the committee on that one. Now I go down a little bit. See, they're not even on the screen yet, and they should because the disrespect continues. I have been mocked. I have been ridiculed. I've been taunted, scoffed at. The jibes. I mean, everybody, while you're in this and Jenna too, you've destroyed me for having the audacity to say the Saints would make the playoffs and giving Jameis just a little love, just a tad bit of love. And lo and behold, Jameis's Saints are ranked ahead of Patrick's Chiefs. Oh, sweet vindication, Nick. I love it. All right, and finally, this is my last thing, Nick. The Chiefs. Let's just change that name. I mean, a game from relegation. I know it hurts you to put that in there. But just change it to just because they're my favorite team. I mean, that would be more accurate. Oh, just okay. Because they're my favorite team. Because that's the only thing. The committee, you know, they should be a tier team below. And this is going to hurt you, Nick. But it's the truth. They should be a tier below, nestled right next to Wilds' Patriots.
The Patriots.
And you know it. You know that's the truth. They're both 3-4. They should be nestled right next to Wilds' Patriots.
Yeah. Wilds knows them. This is outrageous. This is outrageous. Broussard. You can't have it both ways, my friend. You can't on Monday be like, oh, Nick's panicked. I'm not panicked. I picked the Chiefs to go to the Super Bowl. I still think they can turn it around. And now this morning, say they belong in the dreck, in the mud, the morass with the New England Patriots. Stop that. That is utter and complete nonsense, and you know it. And this idea that you're saying, I told you so, Broussard, if 11 years ago, you came up to me and said, Joe Biden is president, you would have been wrong. You don't get to then 10 years later be like, oh, told you so. Look who's the president now. Last week, the Cardinals weren't number one. The Bucs weren't underrated. This is a living, breathing document, the way the Constitution is supposed to be. It can evolve with new information. And so the idea that because a team is now one, it means they should have been one 2 weeks ago and you get some victory lap, I'll be honest, semi-pathetic and embarrassing victory lap is beneath you. It's utterly beneath you. And by the way, congrats to your Saints for that amazing, inspiring 13-10 victory over Geno Smith. I mean, the committee was very impressed by it. Very impressed by it.
Just win, baby. Just win, baby.
Go ahead, Wild.
Here we go.
Can I make a
Let's go, Kevin Wild.
Look who's here. Ulysses visiting from Arizona. He made a special appearance since there's birds finally at the top of the tiers. We are again asking for an invitation to the committee, since you have a log jam between the Ravens and the Bengals, even though the Bengals literally just blew out the Ravens. So for the following reasons, we got dressed up and everything, I would like to move the Bengals up one tier for the following reasons contained henceforth and herein. Sorry, Ulysses, fly away, my friend. First up, a wonderful defense. How good is Cincinnati's defense? Well, I'll let you know. They've got a better scoring defense than the Rams and the Bucs. They're only giving up 18 points a game. They've never given up more than 25. And they just held Lamar to 17 points, sacked him 5 times. They're playing great, so it's not just all Joe Burrow. Speaking of Joe Burrow, how's he playing this year? Phenomenal is the answer. Joe Burrow has more passing touchdowns than Rodgers and Allen. Mainstream media won't tell you that. They'll tell you that Joe Burrow's just okay. They'll tell you that Joe Burrow's hot. No, he's playing better than Josh Allen. He's playing better than Aaron Rodgers. Here's the other thing. Ooh. Joe Burrow just started his 17th game. He's low-key a rookie plus one game. So he's playing phenomenal and is the pride of LSU with his old running mate.
How's Mr. Chase doing? Is he in the Ben Simmons LSU alumni? Not showing up? Wrong. The exact opposite. More reception yards and touchdowns than Tyreek Hill. Also, far few passes bouncing off his hands going as interceptions. Our guy, Jamar Chase. Literally the best start to a career ever by a wide receiver. 754 receiving yards through seven games. 21.5 yards per reception. On pace for 85 receptions. Great connection. Yeah. And the final point, Nicholas. I know that the committee looks backwards rather than forwards. The Bengals have the Jets coming up. Patriots just hung 50 on the Jets. I think Joe Burrow goes out there and embarrasses the Jets. And I think he should be ahead of it. Move the Bengals up.
Well, you wanted me to be ahead of it. That's what Nick's picks is for, not what the committee's rankings are for. The committee's rankings are a snapshot in time. We're not projecting forward, which is if we were, the Chiefs wouldn't be where they were. There'd be a lot of changes there. That's first of all. Second of all, there is a chance that Joe Burrow to Jamar Chase is just going to end up being like the most unstoppable quarterback wide receiver combo of the modern era. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but what I am saying is Dusty just gave this to me. In their last 20 games together, their team is 18-2, and Jamar has 25 touchdowns in their last 20 games.
Great.
Now, 13 of those are at LSU, but 7 of them are in the NFL. And this connection seems to be transcendent. Why do I not have them above the Ravens despite beating the Ravens? Well, it's the same reason, to be honest, I don't have the Bucks above the Cowboys despite the fact that the Bucks beat the Cowboys. We try not to treat with extra importance what just happened. And I understand the Bengals just beat the Ravens, but a week ago, the Ravens were up here and the Bengals were, you know, above middle, but, you know, high upper middle class, if you will. And now they've met right there with the same record. And I think it's a testament to the Bengals how well they're playing right now. But the committee's not yet comfortable saying definitively they're better than the Ravens, even though this past Sunday they were far better than the Ravens, Jenna. But hell of a year for the Bengals already. And Zach Taylor went from most likely to be first coach fired to maybe coach of the year. How about that for Zach Taylor? Still, nobody knows what he looks like. But
yeah, Zach
good
Taylor,
for him.
Remember? That's a couple weeks ago. That was what was holding the Bengals back. How about that? I saw where the Packers were there. They got a big game coming up this week. Let's talk some Aaron Rodgers. The Packers could be without Davante Adams tomorrow night, but could A-Rod actually be better off without his top target? We'll tell you why we're asking next, first things first. That was great. First things first, let's talk some Green Bay Packers. So the Pack placed wide receivers Davante Adams and Alan Lazard on the COVID-19 list. Lazard will be out for tomorrow night's clash with the undefeated Cardinals. Adams still has a slight chance to play. Kind of strange, but Packers are actually 6-0 since 2019 when Adams has been out. Rodgers said Green Bay has, quote, just found a way to win when Adams has missed time. Cardinals defensive coordinator Vance Joseph still bracing for Rodgers' best. Take a listen to this.
I think those guys like, you know, Aaron, Tom, those guys, when they don't have their main weapons, it falls back on those guys. And sometimes it helps them to play an even cleaner game. You know, he's not forced to force the ball to Adams, you know, and when you have a guy like Adams who's a volume, you know, pass catcher, you can kind of trap him into throwing the ball to Adams some. But without Adam, it's going to force Aaron to play, you know, play a true game. And that's sometimes dangerous for us, you know. But he's played his best ball without Adams. And again, you know, not having Adams is not good for them, you know, but it's going to force Aaron to obviously, you know, play a cleaner game. And history showed you he's played good.
So here are the numbers in those games. Vance Joseph was talking about Rodgers 6-0 with 17 touchdowns and just one pick without Adams. We got Greg Jennings joining us now. Greg, you know what life is like as Aaron Rodgers' wideout. 5 seasons together with Rodgers as the starter. Is there something to Rodgers being better without Davante Adams?
Well, I'm not going to go as far as saying he's better without Davante Adams, even though the stats would suggest that. But Van Joseph, he hit the nail on the head. When you are, as a quarterback, an elite quarterback at that, and you're forced to play without your guy, it allows you to play more honest, more open. And more than anything, I think when you look at the offensive of coordinators in positions like this, and with it being Matt, like he's going to put them in a great position. I think he gets less credit than what he deserves in moments like this, because when Davante Adams was out the first game last year against the Saints, we saw Alan Lazard step up. However, they don't have Alan Lazard either this year, they shouldn't. And then we also saw the next game, Robert Tonyan step up. We saw them use their running backs a lot more. So what Van Joseph is alluding to is the quarterback being so smart. Now he's free to just play with progression. I'm going to take who I got, I'm still going to look at matchups, but I'm going to assess every situation a little differently now, because I don't have that go-to guy to where I just, like he said, Van Joseph, he's going to force with volume. And so it does make Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, the combination, even that much more scarier when you think about that, because now you're playing against Aaron Rodgers, and it's like, okay, we got to make him beat us. We know Aaron Jones in the running game is successful, and they've had success there. So with Aaron Rodgers, this is why he's been successful when he doesn't have his guys, because he understands how to go through progressions, use other guys to set up one another. And the scheme that Matt LaFleur puts together typically bodes well for the Green Bay Packers.
This sounds a little bit to me like a football version of, well, then why don't you make the entire plane out of the black box? Like, why don't you play all your games without Davante Adams? Well, I mean, guys, yeah, I get the logic, like, kind of, but we all know it doesn't make sense. And by that, I mean, and I'm not talking about what Greg's saying, I'm talking about what Van Joseph is alluding to. Like, he's actually more dangerous. To me, this is Van Joseph trying to make sure his team doesn't do what some of those previous opponents and secondaries did do, which is say, oh, Devontae's out, we're going to have an easier day. Make sure correct that they stay sharp and ready, because Rodgers is so good, he can make it work, especially on an individual game basis, even without a guy who some people believe is the best receiver in the NFL. But where the number one receiver, and Greg can obviously speak to this better than me, so Greg, tell me if I'm wrong here, but I don't think I am, where he's most valuable is on the gotta have it moments. It's 3rd and 6. We have to move the sticks. You want your guy Broussard, I would say, you want your guy out there for two reasons. One is you trust him the most, and the other is the defense is the most afraid of him. So even if you're not going to him, you're going to have a good number count elsewhere, because he's the guy that's going to be getting doubled. So, yeah, I don't think there is a way to twist this or to make me convinced that in their toughest game of the year up to this point, the Packers are at anything other than a disadvantage not having their second most talented offensive player, Broussard.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree with that. You need Davante Adams. You're not better without him. But the point is true that Aaron Rodgers is forced to focus more. You can, whenever you have a great player, you can use that player as a crutch. And now he's got to be more thorough in going through his progressions. He knows he has to be even more accurate than when you got Davante. Like, so you just have to be a little more focused when you don't have that great receiver there. And Nick, here's the thing. It can work, and what Vance Joseph was saying can be true for a game or two here or there, but not correct for an entire season, and that's the difference. Yeah, here and there, oh, he can be better, but over the long haul, no way. I also think, and I don't think this was Vance's intention, but it won't work, but it could throw out there a little doubt. He's trying, maybe that could be a little doubt with Davante, with Aaron. He's saying they're better without me. He's saying they don't need me. I don't think it's going to work, but you toss it out there and, you know, sow a little discord in one of your rivals or challengers in the NFC. There's nothing wrong with that, Wilds.
Stir the pot.
I agree.
And you can stir the pot, right?
Yeah.
Well, puts me in a tough spot. Because, yes, we're supposed to, but I would like to hear what you had to say about it. We got Saints All-Pro linebacker Demario Davis joining the show. 4-2 Saints welcoming Tom Brady and the 6-1 Bucks to town on Sunday. Talk about the big game with Demario next. First things first. You can tell us in the break, Wilds. First things first, we got to talk some New Orleans Saints. Linebacker Demario Davis played a crucial role in New Orleans win over Seattle Monday night. How crucial? How about 10 tackles, 2 sacks, 3 QB hits, 4 tackles for loss, and a pass defended. Did I lie? Nope, I never do. Sometimes I do. That wasn't even the most impressive part of his night. He then flew back home where his wife just welcomed their 5th kid. Count them, 5. Demario joining us now to talk about that game and his 4-2 Saints team. Demario, thank you for joining us. I'm barely alive with 2 kids. How many of your 5 kids woke you up this morning? Be honest, right now. Come on.
Oh, no, none of them woke me up this morning, fortunately. But it was a late night. You know, they just piled on me from the time I walked through the door yesterday and stayed on me all day and night, even after dinner. So I have a fun time with them. We enjoy it. We're a big family, great kids. We're blessed.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, so you guys are coming off that big win Monday night in Seattle. Your defense, clearly a huge reason why. How much confidence does that defense have now after that performance?
Yeah, it was a great performance, and it's not, you know, just that one. We have I think pretty high levels of confidence and swagger all the time. That's part of our identity. We certainly walk into each and every matchup, you know, with a ton of energy. That's where you get the Juice Boy's name, and just ready to go out and make a statement every week. And I think it's a tribute to our process. We got phenomenal coaches, players who believe if we just do what we're coached to do, we're going to be successful. It's proven. It's been proven over, you know, the last four or five years. And we just want to keep getting better. You know, we chase perfection and try to catch excellence along the way. And that's our standard in every arena.
Was that we chase perfection and try to kiss excellence along the way? Was that the line there? That's a great line. I don't know if you guys came up with that. I've never heard that before. That's really good. And I don't know if your game against the Seahawks was try to catch it. Try to catch excellence. Okay, that probably makes a little more sense. I like kiss as well, though. Maybe you can adjust it however you'd like. Yeah, whatever
Nick's
works. What you said
it.
Makes more sense. But this was the best game for you. I think the best statistical game of your career. I mean, 2 sacks and 4 tackles for a loss in one game, especially a guy playing your position, which isn't going to be a historically, you know, super high sack position, given your responsibility in defense. It was great, but it was a great team defensive game, as you mentioned. And the Saints, this year, I feel like people recognize how good the defense is. But last year, your defense was pretty damn dominant as well, but I wonder if because Drew's the quarterback, people always associate Saints wins or with the offense, even if the defense was doing it. Do you guys feel like you get the recognition or respect league-wide that defense deserves?
It is about respect for us, but it's not about necessarily the respect nationally. It's the respect that we get from our opponents when we step between those lines. Right, they have to watch the film every week, and that's what we do every time we play a game. We're trying to put a type of ferociousness and violence on tape and a type of speed and energy on tape that when the next opponent watches it, you know, they gotta kind of second guess their assignments because they know what they're up against. That's the type of respect that we want. The fact that, you know, people are picking up on, you know, our defense and how we play. You know, we've had to have to go against, you know, the past 2 years where we didn't have a Hall of Fame quarterback in Drew, and I think we were 9-1 in that time. And so we always knew what we could do coming into the season, and it was just about continuing to put that on display. But this group of guys, it's a special group. You know, this unit never gets content. You know, these guys will be back in next week trying to figure out how we can play even better. And that's why I love coming to work with these guys every day.
DeMario, when Jameis Winston joined you guys a couple of years ago, I mean, he was coming off, you know, the year where he had 30 interceptions, led the league. What growth? He was viewed as, you know, reckless and poor decision maker. What growth have you seen from him in the last few years learning under Sean Payton and Drew Brees?
It's been amazing to watch his journey, to watch his progress as a player and as a man. You know, for him to go through what he went through, you think about being a number one overall pick, a star quarterback in his league, and then having to go to a situation where you know you're not going to be playing. You're sitting behind a Hall of Fame quarterback, but at the same time, you're in a good situation. You can learn so much playing with one of the greatest offensive minds in NFL history. And then, you know, step in and take the reins, having gone through that fire and been tested by it, and come out the other side better. And he's a great friend of mine. We have a lot of conversations off the field. And, you know, one of the conversations we had was, you know, James, you've proven that you can make all the throws. You can play at a high level. You've had 5,000-yard season, which many guys in this game haven't even had. The main thing for you is going to be efficiency. And that's where you've seen the biggest growth. You know, he's playing like one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the league. And, man, to walk in that manner, it's been, you know, an amazing thing to see. It's been an incredible amount of growth, and I'm proud of him. I'm proud of his leadership and the way he's taking the reins of that offense. And it's been great, you know, playing with him. He's a great teammate.
All right, tomorrow you play Tom Brady on Halloween, and I think this is going to be a statement game for both sides of the ball. For Tom Brady, Tom Brady's looking to run up the score. He had 5 touchdowns the other week. He wanted to score 50 points against the Bears. He was like mad that he was still in the game, wants to get his stats up. Meanwhile, and I know you talk about the internal respect matters, but the external respect has to ring a little bit, because even I'm like, man, the Saints defense is disrespected. You shut down Aaron Rodgers, and then the story afterwards, like, what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers? Should he have worn flip-flops? Was he in Hawaii too long? Then you go to Foxborough, you shut down the great Mac Jones. Everyone's like, it's Mac Jones. Now, you recently shut down Geno Smith. People are like, it's Geno Smith. It's not Russell Wilson, even though Geno is moving the ball back and forth against the Rams. So how much of a statement game, and how much do you guys want to go out, and is how much of it is a prove-it game against Tom Brady and the Bucs?
You know, it's an important game because it's the next game on our schedule. You know, that's our mentality every week. You know,
Come on.
We're not necessarily respect of whose jersey it is or what numbers on the other side. You can't be in this game. The game is played inside the white lines, and who somebody's gonna be, how they gonna play, you won't know until you get inside those white lines. And that's our mentality when we step out there. It's just an important game because, you know, it's the next game on our schedule, and that's how we're going to approach it. And, you know, our next opponent being the Buccaneers, they're going to get everything we got.
DeMario, when do you think we're going to see Michael Thomas on the field with you guys?
That's outside my wheelhouse, big dog. I don't know. But I know once he steps back on the field, he's going to step out there with a chip on his shoulder and a lot to prove, and I'm excited to see it. Our team's better when he's on the field.
DeMario, Wiles mentioned you got Tampa Bay next. I don't know if you saw it, what Tom Brady said on the Peyton Manning, Eli Manning broadcast on Monday night when he said, you know, that defensive players aren't the sharpest knives in the drawer. Maybe he was joking. I think he was kind of joking, but he said they're like dogs chasing cars. Did you see that comment? And does that bother you guys on the defensive side of the ball at all?
I do think it was a little bit humorous in nature, and to a degree, you know, I think there is a little bit of see ball, get ball in defensive guys, or at least there better be. But, you know, I'd be interested to see, like, you know, how he looks at his defensive guys, right? You know, you got Levante David, Devin White over there, you know, some great linebackers and, you know, a lot of guys in that secondary. And looking at Ty Bowles, right? You know, to pretty much insinuate that there's no intellect on the defensive side of the ball and being a leader in your locker room in the second year there, as them guys trying to gravitate to you, I'd be interested to see how they look at him, you know, and that type of statement being made. I mean, because it came from somewhere. So I'm just glad I don't have to worry about it. It's not in our locker room. But, yeah, I'd be interested to see how those guys did.
DeMario, thank you so much for taking the time. It was a good answer. It was an honest answer. Taking the time for joining us this morning. Good luck in your household. I'm sure when you turn off this Zoom or Skype or whatever it is, it's going to get loud and rambunctious. Enjoy every second of it. And good luck on Sunday. We really appreciate you having me. Speaking of Sunday, not more than the big NFC South showdown, just America's game of the week. This one's a doozy. This one's going to be fun. This one's Bucks Saints. It's Sunday 4 Eastern, only on Fox. Moving on, we're talking some Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs back under 500. Not where anyone expected them to be. Where are they going to land on Nick's new NFL tiers? We're going to reel those next. This is First Things First.
Gotta be low. Gotta be real low.
Hey, time now for the player resume brought to you by Indeed. We help people get jobs. Pretty good line on the old resume for Jorge Soler. Took the third pitch of the game deep, becoming the first batter to ever hit a home run to start a World Series. How about that? Big reason why the Braves are waking up this morning with a 1-0 series lead over the Astros in the Fall Classic. All right, Nick, game two tonight, 7:30 Eastern on Fox. What are you looking forward to in this one?
Yeah, thanks for that Jorge Soler highlight. Another great trade by my Kansas City Royals. We couldn't have used him, but that's neither here nor there. Here is an odd spot where I feel like both teams feel like they have to win. And here's why. It's Braves like, all right, we already went to Houston. You know, we stole a game there. Feel good. Yeah, but with Morton hurt, they almost feel like this series can't go long. The Astros, meanwhile, have to feel like we cannot fall down 0-2 with the first two games in Houston. So I think the Astros win, but I thought the Astros were going to win last night. So I'm 0-1 in predicting this series, but I do think the Astros win tonight, Broussard.
Yeah, obviously there's more pressure on the Astros. Nick, you mentioned the injury with the Braves. Of course, they want to win. But look, I picked the Astros in six to start this before the series, so they better win tonight. I do think their bats wake up and they even this thing at 1-1 tonight, Wilds.
Yeah, I think specifically we're due for like a big Altuve game. He was 3-for-24 against the Red Sox. He went 0-for-5 last night. Jenny had 3 strikeouts. I think he wakes up in a major way, probably hits one out. Take that to Fox Bet. Altuve's going to hit one out. He had 2 home runs against the Red Sox. One's going out tonight. Astros win.
There you go.
All right. Make all three of you have the Astros again. Let's see how they do. See if they can bounce back, get back in the series. Moving on to the NBA now. You are now entering the No Bull Zone, sponsored by Credible Great Rates with none of the bull. Lakers Spurs. First great game of the season for LA. No LeBron in this one. Out with that right ankle soreness. Russ, though, stepping up. 15 of his 33 in the fourth quarter and overtime. Anthony Davis is finishing with 35 points and 17 boards as the Lakers get a much-needed win. Scary moment late in the fourth quarter, though, when AD went down holding his knee. He was able to return. AD later called it a stinger, said he'll see how it feels when he wakes up this morning. So, Chris Broussard, what'd you learn about the Lakers and their overtime win without LeBron last night?
Well, Jenna, they traded for Russell Westbrook to win the championship, period. Not so they could be good without LeBron. They got to play together. But that's one of the fringe benefits of that trade, and it's an important one. Because the previous 3 years, the Lakers were 23-35 without LeBron. They're terrible without LeBron James. And that's not just games he misses, but that's games he plays but goes to the bench for a rest. The team would struggle to maintain a lead that he had built. So This was important because now it shows that the Lakers can be good, not great, but good, maybe even very good without LeBron and win some games without him. Important because had they been able to do this a year ago, they would not have been the seventh seed, would not have been in the play-in tournament,
correct,
would not have played the Phoenix Suns in the first round, and who knows what would have happened. Here's the final thing, though, Nick, quickly. We didn't learn a ton, though, besides that, because the bottom line is LeBron will be back. And LeBron, Westbrook, and AD are going to have to learn to play together. And the more they play together, the better. And we can't make tons of judgments on them when one of them's missing, because that's not how it's going to be when the games really matter.
Right, and I know LeBron, you know, got his ankle rolled up on again, the same ankle that he hurt last year, which is why he missed this game. But I would like for the Lakers to be able to not play LeBron a dozen times, 14 times this year. I don't think they should play him tonight against Oklahoma City. And if they're just awful without him, they're not going to have that option. I do think seeding matters, and I do think that being able to win games like this matters for their playoff chances, even if their ultimate playoff destiny is going to be determined by how well the big three play together when they all are out there. The other thing, Wilds, that jumped out to me was, and AD said it after the game, Malik Monk plus 31 in 39 minutes, which means the team was, I think, minus 27 in, or minus 25 in the 14 minutes he didn't play. It's Malik Monk played well, hit a huge shot, but that's about just adding spacing to the court for Russ and AD. And the other thing that was interesting is in overtime, how'd they start overtime? Without a center. Way they should be starting games. They knew no Dwight, no DeAndre, no center the entirety of overtime. They refuse to start games like that, but they know it's their best lineup, as evidenced, Wilds, by the fact that that's how they went the entirety of overtime.
How much are you worried about LeBron? I feel like we're just kind of blowing past the fact that we're not even, you know, 2 weeks into the NBA season, and we're already talking about LeBron taking two games off. Are you worried about, where's your worry scale on LeBron? It wasn't like a fatigue injury, it was a roll-up injury, but still, I don't think we should pass it. They're like, he's going to miss two games already.
Well, I'm just saying they should rest him tonight. They have him listed as questionable, so I don't know if they will. It's just they're playing the Thunder. I'm not worried about it, Broussard, because he finished the game where it happened and he played another 20 minutes. If he had gone out of that game and then missed this game, I would have been far more concerned, that could be a lingering injury. The fact that against the Grizzlies, Jenna, after it happened, he played the rest of the way tells me this was just more about total precaution.
And you saw last night, if LeBron's out, Russ could step in, so we'll see what happens.